Hello, my friends across the fruited and rooted plain, coming to you from Studio A of Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. It's time for the Gardening Simplified Show with Stacy Hervella, me, Rick Weist, and our engineer and producer, Adriana Robinson. Stacy, today we celebrate meteorological. Are you proud of me? I got that word nailed down.
I'm so proud of you. That was awesome.
Meteorological spring.
Yay,
I made it. And I'll tell you what, we're going to talk today right off the bat about the fact that it's everyone's favorite vegetable, the tomato. And right off the bat, I step into the compost pile for a number of reasons, Stacy. Number one, it's not everybody's favorite vegetable. Number two, 50% of people are saying, hey, Rick, it's not a vegetable, it's a fruit. And there's all kinds of controversy surrounding tomato plants. Like, do you store them in the fridge or do you store them at room temperature? So why don't we just dive into it?
Let's do it.
All right. So this is the time of year when we start thinking about starting some tomato seeds indoors. And it's actually a pretty easy thing to do, isn't it?
It's one of the easiest gardening things to do. And I think possibly one of the absolute best cures for spring fever when winter has dragged on too long and you're itching to get out in the garden. Starting some tomato seeds indoors is a very good idea. Now, I want to say, though, if you just want to start tomato seeds just for the sake of doing it, you can pretty much ignore everything we're about to say from here on out, because that's perfectly fine.
Sure.
But you can't expect to grow a really good, sturdy, healthy tomato seedling without a little bit of extra work, and by which I mean extra light. You're definitely going to need some light if you want to start tomato seeds indoors.
And I think your point is well taken, Stacy, because one of the problems we run into when we get excited about growing some tomatoes is the fact that they can get leggy and tall pretty quick. So we have to do two things. As you mentioned, plenty of light, and number two, don't jump the gun.
Oof.
I mean, you got to take a look at your last frost date, allow a little bit of time for hardening off outside, and count back, I'm going to say 6 to 8 weeks. Do you agree with that?
100%. Okay. 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, I will say, as a young gardener, and I'm sure many people who are listening can empathize, I just got so excited about gardening and planting seeds that I did it way too early.
Yeah.
And you might be sitting there thinking, well, what does that matter? And it does matter, because what happens if the plants are growing too long indoors, even with good lighting, they get stressed. And then you try to put them outside, they get sunburned, they get stunted. Yeah. It takes them so long to recover from being placed outside that it's really not worth it. So, you know, gardening is very much a do as I say and not as I do or did in the case of tomato seedlings. But I would absolutely urge everyone out there, no matter how bad the spring fever is, go ahead and plant some tomato seeds now just to see what happens. But definitely save the bulk of it for that 6 to 8 week window before your last frost and they start getting to be warm enough to go outside. I heard a great tip many years ago about when to plant tomatoes outside.
What's that?
When it's warm enough to walk barefoot on the soil.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, because basically what that means is, you know, the soil's warmed up. Tomatoes are a tropical crop. Mm-hmm. They really don't like cold soil. They don't really like cold temperatures. And if it's warm enough that you can be out there on the soil in a barefoot, then it's probably warm enough for you to get your tomatoes
outside.
That's
really good. I like that. You know, whatever approach you take, I'm fine with it. So here. Some people may be asking us, Stacy, well, why bother? Sure, I have spring fever, so I want to grow some tomatoes. But, you know, go to the garden center in May and just pick out a few tomato plants. And yet, I like the idea of starting tomato seeds indoors because your choice, the selection, is so much better. And there are many people out there interested in heirloom tomatoes, open pollinated varieties. And there's so many great ones. I think of Cherokee Purple and Brandywine and the famous Mortgage Lifter heirloom tomato. Have you ever grown that
one? I have grown Mortgage Lifter.
Have you?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
It's great. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah, so the story behind that developed in the 1930s by M.C. Miles, a West Virginia radiator mechanic who went by the nickname of Radiator Charlie. Anyhow, like millions of others, he was negatively affected by the Great Depression and came up with a plan to create a larger, better-tasting tomato, and that's how Mortgage Lifter helped him pay his mortgage came about.
It's a great story. And so many of the heirloom tomatoes have those kinds of stories associated with them. And who doesn't love a plant with a good story? That's kind of what we're all about here on the Gardening Simplified Show. And it, you know, I am a full proponent of growing your own tomatoes indoors because I do love that extra selection. But I have to confess that, you know, in the last 15 or 20 years, we've gone from, you know, going to the greenhouse and being able to choose from like Better Boy and Sweet 100 to, you know, 15 or 20 different varieties and very often some really interesting heirlooms as well. So I think it's a great idea to grow indoors if you have the equipment and wish to, but you're no longer limited to just, you know, a couple of kind of standard tried and true, but not necessarily that interesting varieties. And, you know, farmers markets, that's a whole new ballgame.
Oh, yeah.
Because so many farmers markets offer a really great selection of heirlooms as well.
Hear, hear. I agree. You know which tomato smells the best?
I sense a pun coming up.
Aroma. Aroma.
Oh, that's good a good one, Rick.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll get that one to you, yeah.
I didn't even have to explain it, so it must be a good one.
That's a very good start.
All right, Stacy. So just like with any other plant, the soil's important. A good lightweight seed starting media, some heat and some humidity, right?
So what do you mean by humidity?
Humidity meaning humidity when we first plant the seeds and then once they get growing, the air movement is so important to avoid things like damping off.
Oh, that's what I mean. For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You got to have good air circulation. And I do want to talk briefly about lights because for many years, the standard advice was that you could just go get a fluorescent shop light and place it, you know, just about an inch or two above your plants.
Right.
And that still works. But the thing that really just boggles my mind and is just so amazing is that LED home grow lights have come down in price and are nearly as affordable as that fluorescent shop light. And I know last year I invested in a small LED grow light for my indoor seedlings. Okay. And it has been a game changer. Mm. It uses less energy. It doesn't make a horrible buzzing sound, and it's light, much lighter in weight, so it's a lot easier to adjust as the tomatoes grow.
That's great advice. Yeah.
The one that I bought is called Happy Leaf. It's made in the U.S., and I would highly recommend that. But there's so many out there. I know when I started looking, I was like, whoa, how do I even start to pick? But it might sound like a big investment, but it really isn't. And, you know, they're going to last you for years. You never have to replace the bulbs on an LED. So I would say that. And I do use heat mats. Do you use heat mats?
Yeah, heat mats, because the soil temperature, again, we want that soil temperature in that 70, 80 degree range, right, to get good germination. So,
and if they sit too long, they can start to rot or, you know, not germinate. So I do like my heat mats a lot. I use them for just about everything.
People used to put them on top of those old-fashioned radiators in the home, but most people do not have those anymore. And then, of course, when we plant the seeds, Stacy, we've got to think also about thinning. Don't be afraid to plant those seeds because you can always thin them. And then if they get to the point of being leggy once we've hardened them off, of course, when we put them in the garden, I'm a big proponent of deep planting tomatoes along the stem because they'll root along that stem.
It's the only way I'll do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is. So basically what Rick is saying is that as you plant your tomato, any part that doesn't have foliage on it, and even some parts that do, the lower parts, you can snap those leaves off and bury it up until that first set of leaves that you want it to start growing from. And then that does give it so much opportunity to root. I even do that in containers. I grow most of my tomatoes in containers because of my deer problem.
Yep.
And I grow them in a little enclosure on my patio. And, you know, I have really large, like 22-inch diameter containers. And I will basically fill in up until, you know, that top thing. That's my go-to tomato.
So if you're growing tomatoes in containers, one of the things to do is to check the seed packet or the variety, whether or not it's determinate, indeterminate, or semi-determinate. And it has nothing to do with how determined that plant is to grow, but rather the size of the plant and how it produces the fruit. So make sure to check that. Well, I can't believe it. It's meteorological spring.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. Our YouTube viewers, if you are tuning in there, you will see that we have officially switched over to our spring backdrop, out with the old and in with the new. And we have a beautiful, cheerful, colorful spring banner to celebrate the season.
And we have to say thank you so much for all of you tuning in. Thanks for watching on YouTube, downloading the podcast, or listening to us on radio. The Gardening Simplified Show coming up next. Plants on trial, but it's going to be a little different today, Stacey. Yeah. As a matter of fact, this will be loads of fun. Don't miss it. That's next here on the Gardening Simplified Show.
The Gardening Simplified podcast is brought to you by Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. With over 300 flowering shrubs and evergreens, all trialed and tested for your success. There's one for every taste and every space. See them all at ProvenWinnersColorChoice.com. Greetings, gardening friends, and welcome back to the Gardening Simplified Show. I'm Stacey Hervella. I'm here with Rick Weist. And before we get to plants on trial, I want to just round out our last segment about tomatoes with another little tomato saying you'll appreciate.
Sure.
Okay. Intelligence is knowing a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad.
Thank you. Thank you. And our viewers and listeners, thank you. Because like I said, 50% of them are saying, hey, Rick, it's not a vegetable. So,
Well, you know, I don't get too pedantic about it because, you know, I understand. Does it really matter? You don't look for the tomatoes in the fruit section. Like, they're kind of in between. So whatever you want to call it is fine with me. But, you know, normally this is the part of the show where we talk about one of the 320-plus Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs, tell you all about it, and you put it on trial by deciding if you will add it to your landscape or garden. And this week, seeing as it is now March, we are going to talk instead about our Shrub Madness competition.
Oh, I love it.
So Shrub Madness is something we've been doing. This is our 10th year of doing it, which is pretty wild. So something we are well familiar with. And basically, it's like that college basketball tournament, but instead of teams, all 64 players are Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. So it's like putting 64 Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs on trial all at once. Now, I know a lot of people get confused. How can this work? How can a shrub be a competitor in a tournament? None of this makes any sense to me. But Rick, you're a first-time Shrub Madness player this year, yeah?
Yes, I am. And boy, was that fun and challenging. You have to bring your A game.
You do have to bring your A game.
You can't beat around the bush. This is not Bush League, okay? This is Shrub Madness. And boy, is it fun.
It is really fun. So here's how it works. You will go to shrubmadness.com. Very easy to remember. And when you get there, you can click Play Shrub Madness. Now, for up until Monday, you will be able to fill out a prediction bracket. So if you know anybody who's really into college basketball, you know that as the tournament starts to get played out, they predict which teams they think are going to move on. So it's the same with Shrub Madness. Mm-hmm. You're going to go into the software at shrubmadness.com, and you're going to predict in each matchup, so the shrubs are placed one-to-one, which shrub you think will move on to the next round. So for the first round, you'll do that for 32 matchups. And then for the second round, you'll do that for 16 matchups. And you'll do that all the way until you select which variety of Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs you think is going to be the champion. If you create a login, it will save all of your information. And of course, we do encourage you to create a login because that's the only way you're going to be able to win a prize. Because if you don't have a login, we can't contact you. We can't just pull your name out of thin air from the internet. We have to have you in the database of players. So do create that account. Go ahead and fill out all your predictions and then save it. And then you don't have anything to do until Monday. And then the voting starts.
The madness begins.
The madness does begin in earnest. And the way that works is you can come back every single day. And once it's open for voting, you will just click on which shrub in each matchup you think should move on to the next round. Now, you can make it match your bracket if you really want to go for the gusto and try to win. Or, you know, sometimes I find for myself, I'm just like, oh, you know what? I'm feeling this one today, and I mix it up every day.
You know, I approached this. I filled out my bracket yesterday. Okay, so I'm not eligible to win here. I just did it because it's so much fun. But I approached it thinking, this is easy. It is not easy because as you get further on in the bracket, suddenly you have plants up against other plants that you absolutely love. It's my, what do we always say, Stacy? That's my favorite.
Yes.
And then you can't make it, and you got to knock one out.
It is. It's brutal. Tough. It gets brutal. Very brutal as you move on. And you know what also is brutal? Seeing one of your favorites get knocked out because you're just like, how come everybody's not voting for this amazing plant? I love this thing. And it's not getting any votes. We've all been there over the 10 years we've been running Shrub Madness. So for week one for voting, that's going to last a whole week, Monday to Monday. And you can just come back every single day and vote to get your favorites more votes. You can enlist your friends. But again, here, they don't have to have a registration to play and vote. But again, if anyone wants to win, you are going to need to register. And I'm sure I keep talking about winning. So maybe people want to know about our amazing Shrub Madness prizes.
The prizes are absolutely fantastic. Stacy and I show up at your house and we re-landscape. No.
Wow.
No.
That would be amazing. Maybe in a future Shrub Madness.
Okay.
But the grand prize is pretty close because for our grand prize winner, what we're going to do is fly you and a guest here to our beautiful trial gardens in Grand Haven, Michigan. Yay. We're going to put you up, pay all your expenses, and you'll get to spend a day or two walking around the gardens at the height of hydrangea season in July. And we had winners last year from Massachusetts that came out here and just had a great time. Really couldn't believe it. So that's the grand prize. And in addition to the trip, you get four 1 gallon plants of the four plants that go to the floral four in Shrub Madness.
The floral four. Very good.
Actually, it's the floral finals.
Floral finals.
But same difference. All right. So so you get down to there and you'll get those four plants as well as the trip and you'll get a bag of swag and it's a pretty great gig. But the only way you can win the grand prize is if you fill out a bracket and your bracket is closest to how the voting actually plays out. So you don't have to get them all right. We've certainly heard from people who have said, wait, what? There's no way I'm going to get these all right. This is madness. It is madness, but you don't have to get them all right. You just have to get as close as possible to how the popular vote actually turns out. And that's where it pays to enlist your friends and family in the voting.
Yeah. Yeah. And Stacy, I'm convinced that I have picked the eventual champion. I am
all right,
convinced. I'm now, for folks who want to do this again, I just found this to be so much fun. They just go to shrubmadness.com,
that's
right?
That's it. It's
and,
very simple.
And build a login there or a username, and away you go with Shrub Madness.
Yeah, so you just click Play Shrub Madness while you're there. There's lots of other content to explore if you are so inclined. But if you want to just fill out your bracket, you only have a couple more days to do it because voting does begin on Monday. It is a difficult process in that you want, you know, all of your favorites to win, but it probably only takes about 10 or 15 minutes to vote and fill out your bracket. Now, so like I said, to be eligible for the grand prize, you got to fill out a bracket, but the other ones, as long as you're registered, you will be eligible for end of round drawings for all of the shrubs, the shrubs that are winning in those matchups. So we give away, gosh, like 60 some plants then. And then we will randomly draw four winners to get 1 gallons of the final floral final plants at the end. So there's so many opportunities to win, and we'll ship these plants right to your door. And as we like to say, Shrub Madness is a great cure for spring fever.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see how this plays out. And just like March Madness in the NCAAs, I think there's going to be some upsets along the way. I mean, Stacy, I have to be honest with you, as I was filling this bracket out, I'm thinking, what happens if, for example, a barberry upsets a hydrangea?
Oh, bite your tongue, Rick.
I knew that was coming.
So you bring up a good point, though. So in the 10 years that we have been doing Shrub Madness, there has not been a single year where a hydrangea or a rose did not win.
I can believe that.
So, you know, as much as we love hydrangeas and roses, and we truly do, it would be nice if for our 10th year, something else had a chance. We actually went so far as to remove hydrangeas from the competition entirely one year because we were hoping that something else would, you know, rise to the surface and a rose still won. Roses have also won in previous years. We've had a couple. Last year's winner was Firelight Tidbit, Panicle Hydrangea, and it is a beauty. And, you know, if you think it's hard to vote, imagine the person who has to select all the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. You know, she gets a lot of pressure from everybody else. Oh, well, if you put those two pictures together, of course, that one's going to win. And so McKenna, who ran Shrub Bendis this year, she's gotten a lot of input, unsolicited at times, but we do our best to make even and fair matchups so that it's also a great opportunity to just learn about a whole bunch of plants and see a whole lot of pretty pictures. And who doesn't want to do that on a March weekend?
It's loads of fun. I encourage you to do it. Shrubmadness.com. Talk about fun. I have a dark horse, and that is clematis, by the way.
Ooh, we do have some great clematis.
Sweet summer love clematis.
Ooh, one of my favorites. Yeah. Definitely. So shrubmadness.com. If you have any questions, there's a contact form there and we can help you out. But do take a few moments to get that and hopefully you'll win something, if not our amazing grand prize. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to be opening up the garden mailbag. So please stay tuned. Thanks for listening to the Gardening Simplified podcast, sponsored by Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. Learn more about our trialed, tested, and proven flowering shrubs and evergreens, and find a local retailer at provenwinnerscolorchoice.com. Greetings, gardening friends, and welcome back to the Gardening Simplified Show. And one of the ways that we simplify gardening for you on this show is by answering your garden questions. And we have a lot, but if you would like to add to that list, we would be happy to help you. You can just email us at help, H-E-L-P, at gardeningsimplifiedonair.com or visit gardeningsimplifiedonair.com and click contact us. So let's get right to it, because I know we have a bunch to try to get to today.
All right, so Jesse asks us, says, I have a garden center in upstate New York. I frequently have people ask, what would be a good memorial plant? Any suggestions on a couple of shrubs, trees, and perennials? And Stacy, again, for myself, having been in the garden center industry for over 40 years, I got this question a lot.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So I have some real feelings on this. And people will often ask me too, you know, what would you plant? One thing that comes to mind for me is the 9/11 memorial in New York City and how the architects of that memorial came about selecting the trees that would go on the memorial. And one of the factors involved was, were the trees native, or the tree that they selected, which happened to be swamp oak, by the way, Quercus bicolor, I think that's okay. What it is, is that the tree is native to the region where many of these people lost their lives. I thought that was really great.
I think that's a really good guideline for selecting something. I know when my mother-in-law sadly passed away last year, we wanted to plant something for her that was native to Ohio, as she was. And so we still haven't found one, to plant an Ohio buckeye, because, I mean, I'm crazy about Aeschylus, one of my absolute favorites. And but my other choice for her would have been an amelanchier or serviceberry, which is also native to Ohio. And I mean, I think if you need like one go-to plant and it's going to be a tree, I think serviceberry is amazing because it does have year-round beauty. And, you know, my mother-in-law loved birds and the birds love serviceberry. And it's one of those plants that can kind of fit just about anywhere. It's pretty easy to incorporate into a landscape. But I think that this notion, Rick, that you've just described, that, you know, it's good to have that go-to list because some people do just want to come in and buy what you recommend. But I think it's also valuable to think about, what are you commemorating? Do you want, if possible, for the plant to look really beautiful, you know, if it's the birth of a baby? Do you want it to be in full bloom at that time and then it becomes part of your celebration? Or, you know, in the case of someone who passed away, do you want it to be in bloom so it kind of lifts your spirits at this, you know, very sad anniversary? But I or does the person have a favorite color? I think that's another really nice and easy way is did the person that you are memorializing absolutely, you know, love a specific color or have some sort of connection to something that you did together? I mean, yeah, it's good to have that kind of list. And Jesse, we will put together something so you have a little back pocket list for these people who do come in. But I think if you can encourage people to make it a little bit more personal, so that it has meaning tied to the person or event that they're commemorating, it just becomes a lot more meaningful.
Some favorites of mine that I would throw out there, Stacy, would be, of course, Malice or crab apples.
Can't go wrong with
Sweet
that.
Sweet Sugar Time, Showtime, something like that. I agree with you on Service Berry. Red buds, the luscious lavender red bud, of course, last week when we talked about specimen plants, we talked about weeping plants. I also like evergreens because evergreens just in nature is something that you can enjoy year round. And so picking out a nice cami cypress or a weeping spruce or something like that is great. Now, one of my favorite trees for this purpose is tricolor beech.
Ooh,
love that tree. And I think it makes a great memorial tree. And then Jesse, of course, asked an interesting thing, too. He mentioned perennials. Mm-hmm. For me, through the years, it would be an Ito peony, ooh. I-T-O-H, for our listeners. Now, an Ito peony is a cross between an herbaceous and a tree peony. And the blooms on those things are so, they take your breath away when you see one in bloom, and I think would make for a great memorial perennial.
You're right about that. That is an excellent choice. And, you know, I think the important thing, though, whatever someone picks, it doesn't, you know, it, trees often come to mind, but it doesn't have to be something that's so monumental or requires so much. The important thing is that it means something to you and or to the person that you're commemorating with that planting. And so I would say another good thing to do is to have a little something there that demarcates, you know, that it's a memorial tree, whether that's an engraved rock or a little plaque or, you know, something that you hang in the tree or place on the ground, a little ornament, just to make it a little more special.
Absolutely.
What do we got next?
Grace is wondering, says, good morning. Last summer, I purchased a braided tropical hibiscus with double orange flowers. It was spectacular all summer. Tried to grow it over winter in the house. After a couple months, the stems would start to shrivel, turn black. It was a total loss. Any tips that you can share? And Grace says she was careful about the watering, and I'm sure that she was. But again, Stacy, a tropical plant, moving it into a dry environment is pretty tough.
Well, and you know, specifically woody plants too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of herbaceous tropical stuff that you can grow outdoors and easily move inside. Take spider plants, right?
Yes.
Spider plants are a very popular patio plant that people bring indoors, no problem. But often when it comes to woody plants like the tropical hibiscus, they really, really struggle to make it indoors. And Grace, I don't think it was your watering that was the issue. It's just the dryness in the air, the lack of air circulation, the lack of sun, even if you do have, you know, a very sunny room. Windows filter out so much of the light spectrum that, you know, most plants just really can't thrive. They just kind of limp along if you're lucky, or maybe if you're not lucky, because sometimes they limp along so poorly that you're just like, ugh, I just wish this thing would die so I could get rid of it. But I know as these tropical hibiscus have become more popular and more widespread, a lot of people do try to overwinter them indoors. And while it's always worth a try, I would definitely not beat yourself up. These tropical hibiscus are always going to be hard to overwinter in regular household conditions.
And, you know, through the years, I have been able to help out folks by saying, okay, if you want to try this, the whole thing here is to keep it alive until next year when we can put it back outside. So it really doesn't matter. So if you have like an unheated bedroom where, you know, obviously it's not going to freeze, maybe you can have light through the window, you really back off on the watering, maybe most of the foliage drops off, but the whole key with that woody plant is keeping it alive so that when spring comes, day length extends, then you can bring this plant back to life, so to speak.
Right, and once it goes, if you can get it to this point, once it goes outside, it'll catch up really, really quickly. But
I like that. It's that easy.
But I do, you know, I don't want people to really beat themselves themselves up because, you know, this, I was just talking about my mother-in-law who we sadly lost, but she would always try to overwinter her tropical hibiscus. She loved them. She'd always try to overwinter them indoors and it, yeah. And she had a lot of gardening skills, but it never went well. So, Grace, you're in good company. I know that's cold comfort, but, it's just one of those things. Don't stop trying, but also don't beat yourself up.
Exactly. There's a question also from Terry, but I'm lost here,
okay,
Stacey.
Yes.
Can you help me out?
Yeah,
with that?
So Terry is writing about something really awful, and I'm sorry to hear, Terry, that you have this problem. He has herbaceous hibiscus, dinner plate hibiscus, as you know, one of my absolute most favorite plants, and they have sawfly larvae. Have you ever seen the sawfly on this plant? And it is very devastating. And, you know, I'll tell you, Terry, your question sent chills down my spine because I don't want this.
She loves hibiscus. I do. Herbaceous hibiscus.
I mean, I seriously have like 15
or more. You asked the right person.
I seriously have 15 or more in my garden. I'm crazy about them. So the sawfly is a larva. It's actually a wasp larva. They look like caterpillars, but they're not. And they leave these very distinctive rice-shaped kind of holes in the leaves that you won't mistake it for any other pest. And, you know, I looked at a bunch of different information on controlling hibiscus sawfly for you, Terry. And I will, of course, link those in the show notes at GardeningSimplifiedOnAir.com. But the number one thing, you know, unless you do want to use chemicals, is going to be hand picking them. And, you know, that's something that it's totally possible because once you start seeing the damage on the foliage, rather than actually hand picking the individual tiny little larva, you can just snip that whole leaf off. Because if you see one, chances are there's a whole bunch more there, and you can just take your snips and snip that whole leaf off into a little, you know, garbage bag or something like that, and then destroy that. Do not compost it. Just make sure it goes into the garbage. That's what I personally would do. Otherwise, you're definitely looking at some sort of chemical control.
Well, if the hand-picking thing, I was going to say, Stacey, she can join the rest of us who are out there with a Cool Whip container, soapy water in it, right?
Yeah.
And doing the hand-picking thing. Get some tomato hornworms in the process.
Oof, yeah. Well, you know, the trick about the sawflies is that because they're consuming the plants, they turn the exact color of the plant, and they
it's kind of gross.
It's fascinating, but hand picking is definitely easier said than done. So again, look for that damage, and I would say just cut off the whole leaf. You're not going to harm the plant, and it's going to be a lot easier than trying to squish. And you know, by keeping that up, you can effectively control them. But again, we'll put some resources in the show notes. We've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we've got branching news. So please stay with us. At Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs, we love plants. That's why we bring you the Gardening Simplified podcast, and that's why we trial and test all of our shrubs to make sure they outperform everything else on the market. Let our expertise help you create the garden or landscape of your dreams. Get started at ProvenWinnersColorChoice.com.
Welcome back to the Gardening Simplified show. It's time for branching news, not breaking news. It's branching, but it's real life stuff, folks. We don't make this up. And well, speaking of tomatoes today, let's catch up on this branching news story. The Heinz people were looking for folks to help them find a man who survived nearly a month at sea with nothing but ketchup and seasonings. And he survived it. So he was drifted out to sea. I think he was working on his boat in St. Martin in December, and he accidentally started drifting out to sea. The Colombian Navy had to rescue him. The Heinz Company, the ketchup people, heard about this, and good for them. They want to get this gentleman a new boat, but they couldn't find him. And, well, with the miracle of social media, they eventually have tracked him down. And so this gentleman who survived for close to a month on ketchup packets, gets a new boat. I think that's great.
I think it's great he had ketchup on his boat in the first place.
Yeah, in hindsight, right? Anyhow, we are your trusted news source for tomato news. Boy, is that bad. I'm just reading that right there. Sorry. maybe I should just move on. Anyhow, good news. He's found. He's got a new boat. That's great. We should all joking aside, talk a moment about what's been going on in the Southeast. If you look at the Southeast, just a historic heat wave. You look at cherry trees in Washington, D.C. or along the coast or into South Carolina. I'm seeing stuff in social media where the daffodils are in full bloom, trees leafing out, blooming out way earlier. You know, we all know what happened last year in April for a lot of the country and how cold it was. And I think we probably have some cold weather coming along. You think about the peaches in Georgia, mm-hmm. peaches and blueberries. Oh my, yeah. This is concerning.
Definitely. You know, those flowers and developing fruit are so tender and they really, you know, without good conditions during that blooming and ripening period, one bad frost could easily take out an entire crop.
Well, and Stacy, you've talked about this many times about the importance of some chill hours for plants in order to bloom properly and to go through their cycle properly. And this season, as of February 19, the total number of chill hours they were saying in Peach County, Georgia, 746 compared to a historical average of over 1,100. So these trees and plants certainly have left the gate early. And now if we face some cold weather down the road, I'm just concerned for those folks there in the Southeast.
Yeah, it's scary. And, you know, I worry it's a little too early yet to worry about apples here in Michigan. But, you know, that's a perennial issue, especially out here in West Michigan.
Yeah. All right. Here's an interesting routine. Pick this up in social media. Eating an orange in the shower. Have you ever eaten an orange in the shower?
I have never even thought to bring an orange into the bathroom, much less the shower.
You know, last week I talked about eating in bed, that survey that we covered, and it was funny seeing the reaction of people to your facial expression, Stacy, and you just gave me another one of those with the orange in the shower. But this, the concept is simple. Turn on your shower, grab an orange, get in, start peeling, eat the fruit, and enjoy all that citrusy goodness. In other words, if you're tired of winter, you can't wait for spring. They say the essential oils of the orange, especially when you're peeling it in the shower, it will transform you, or not transform you, transfix you. What's the word I'm looking for?
Transport you.
Thank you. I can always count on you, Stacy. Transport you to spring or summer, and I zest my case. I'm going to try it. I've never done it, but...
Well, I guess if you get juice all over and get sticky, you're conveniently right there in the shower.
Yeah, it's great.
Who thought of this? That's the real question. I guess someone who like went to some tropical paradise and ate an orange under a waterfall and was like, I want to go back to that moment. Yeah. But, you know, here in Michigan.
I don't know.
All right, well...
It was an orangeal thought. That's... No, that one doesn't work. Okay, I'll move along. I love this. Two middle schoolers in Northern Virginia are proof that setting specific boundaries is a savvy business move. So, Stacy, these two young men, their names are Marin Kickbush, I love that name, 12 years old, his friend Apian Kitchen, 11, they're in Arlington, Virginia. Anyhow, they posted these laminated signs all over town to drum up work for mowing and doing yard work. They spelled mowing, M-O-W-I-G, Mowig, but it was too late. They had already printed and laminated the signs. But these young entrepreneurs, I'm going to call them entrepreneurs.
And I knew that was coming.
Yeah, and that is that's a compliment, okay? But they put all kinds of disclaimers on the signs that maybe they can't show up if they have soccer practice, or they have soccer on the weekends, wrestling and swimming. And they're very specific about having the cash ready at the time they arrive, and they would like mowing projects near their school because they don't want to have to walk 5 miles with a lawnmower. All practical stuff. These guys are great.
Yeah, well, they gotta hand it to them for trying. You have to be honest about your schedule and availability. It's a good lesson for adulthood.
It is great. They're going to start a turf war there in Arlington, Virginia, but these guys are great. And we'll post that link there at gardeningsimplifiedonair.com. Stacy, the Artist Zoo in Amsterdam has taken sustainability to a new level. They're working with students at the zoo, and they made a park bench of 65% elephant dung and 35% recycled plastic. And this is a great looking bench. The zoo has a problem because the elephants, of course, generate a lot of this evacuation, I'm going to call it, on a day-to-day basis, and they have to do something with it. And they're building benches out of them, park benches. I thought it was really great.
That is interesting. Do they hold up in the rain?
They seem to hold up just well.
Okay.
I don't know. They're just trying a bunch of new things, like elephants. They're great at multitasking, whatever. The story is turning out to be irrelevant, elephant. So, but anyhow, I find that incredibly fascinating. And of course, sustainability and using things in our garden that we repurpose, the garden gate, whatever it may be. Do you like going to like some of these art shows or junkyards or whatever and looking for stuff?
That is not really 100% my style, but I love seeing when other people do it.
Yeah, it's just a fun thing.
Yeah, there's some amazing garden art, and you know, I've been to a lot of cool gardens that do really neat stuff with repurposed items. I'm not like a huge garden art person for my yard. For the right piece, I would certainly make an exception, but for the most part, my yard, the plants are the ornament.
Well, living where I live, I'm big into driftwood. I'm constantly on the beach, in the water, looking for driftwood, and you'd be amazed at the number of things that you can do with driftwood. That's loads of fun for me.
I actually have quite a bit of driftwood too. So you live near the beach. What else are you going to do?
Exactly. You know, and what do you do with it? Well, you collect it. Okay. So I've got a shed full of driftwood. Anyhow, it's meteorological spring. Stacy, it's exciting for us to get here to spring. It's been a long winter, maybe outside. The weather still doesn't always feel like it, but excited about spring coming along and want to encourage people to share with others, to subscribe on YouTube, to watch us on a weekly basis, to download the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, please do so. We're having fun interacting with folks all over the country who just like us are excited about spring.
Yeah, and you know what? It's just getting started. So I'm really excited to share our experience and thoughts and opinions as the prime time comes. It's go time.
So one more time, Stacy, Shrub Madness. How are folks going to get involved with Shrub Madness?
Yeah, just visit shrubmadness.com, click Play Shrub Madness. You have until Monday to fill out a prediction bracket and hopefully qualify for our grand prize. And then starting Monday, you can vote and still win plant prizes, but definitely get yourself to Shrub Madness as soon as you can.
Good luck and have fun. I want to thank Adriana Robinson, our engineer and producer, does such a fabulous job of producing this show. Thank you, Adriana. Stacy, always a privilege and pleasure. Happy trellis to you until we weed again.
Thanks, Rick. Likewise. Have a great week, everyone.